Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
The thing with being a novelist, or really with any creative endeavor, is we have to willingly enter into the not knowing. We have to embrace that fact that there are myriad nuances to be unfolded. Characters we haven't met yet, actions we haven't invented, thousands upon thousands of words waiting to be chosen. If I know how a story ends when I start writing a book, I throw it aside. It's not worth writing if there are no surprises. When you slide down a mountain or jump off a cliff, you accept the not knowing. Don't tell me how it ends. Let me see for myself. The trick of life is understanding that even when we are simply standing to the side, as I did as a child near the ice, watching other people taking risks, we are engaging in the not knowing too. Everything is a risk. That's what's hitting so many people so hard right now, here, as we approach May 2020. They didn't know that they didn't know.
Jamie Attenberg is the New York Times best-selling author of 6 novels and 1 short story collection. She's probably best known for her novel, The Middlesteins. Jamie has shifted gears with her latest book. It's a memoir called I Came All This Way to Meet You, Writing Myself Home. The book uses free-flowing prose to take us inside the life of her mind. Jamie bravely shares the ups and downs of her life and the one constant throughout, her core identity as a writer.
Honestly, I never wanted to write a memoir. If you had asked me 3 years ago, I would have said, never, ever, ever would I do it. All of a sudden, I had all these stories that I wanted to tell. I was about to turn 50. I wanted to collect all my thoughts into one place, reflections especially on being a writer and an artist and a creative person, and see what I'd learned and kind of recognize the mistakes that I'd made and the lessons that I could glean from them. And it just made perfect sense at the time that I should suddenly start to write this thing, as it is with, you know, most creative projects that I start. It didn't seem like it made sense until it did.
I love the title of your memoir, I Came All This Way to Meet You, Writing Myself Home. Why did you choose these words for the title?
Well, I Came All This Way to Meet You is actually a sentence from the book that shows up late in the book, where I'm walking through an ossuary in Naples. There are a couple of moments in the book where I explore otherworldly places, cemeteries, ossuaries, catacombs, things like that, and think about ghosts and talk about ghosts. And this is really near the end of the book where I've arrived at this place in my life. You know, really, it only happened a few years ago. I was more peaceful. I was more calm at that moment. And I just was saying hi to the ghosts as I was walking through the ossuary. That was that moment. It popped out at me, that line, that it's, of course, the book is about finding myself too, and also finding all the people in my life that I love. And so it does a lot of work, that title.
It does, definitely. And it's a great title. I can't think of a better title for a memoir, really, to be honest. You tweeted that you're finding it so much more difficult to talk about memoir than your fiction because there are no characters to hide behind. Was it difficult for you to write your memoir because you had no characters to hide behind?
It's really tricky. Fiction is a great place for a person to hide. And the characters, you spend a lot of time getting to know them, and you love them and hate them sometimes too. And it's easy to, you know, it's like gossiping about someone, which is one of my favorite things to do. I love to gossip. I think of fiction writing as just basically gossiping about characters. So I can do that all day, really. But gossiping about myself is a different story.
Very well said. You have this very powerful paragraph about grief early on in your book. Could you please read it to us?
Grief can be forever. We are taught to seek closure in this country. We are encouraged to move on quickly. We are judged, possibly, for not getting over things fast enough. But grief can be for your whole life.
Thank you. If you don't mind my asking, how big a part has grief played in your own life?
Well, at that moment, what I'm writing about is the grief of my mother, who's lost her parents when she was young, and how that had sort of impacted me and how I watched her travel with it in her life. In a way, I haven't had that much to grieve. I mean, there have been losses in my life. Bad things have happened to me. I've witnessed bad things happen to other people. I've been really lucky, I think, really lucky that I haven't really lost people that are close to me. But I don't know. There's still things that I mourn. There's still things that I carry with me. But I think it's about exploring it. I spend a lot of time thinking, you know, I write through everything, whether it's in fiction or nonfiction. And I hope that I carry it well. I hope that I don't allow the sadness in my life to get in the way of me being the best version of myself.
Yeah. You interviewed your father because you were trying to figure out why you are the way you are. What did you learn about him and about yourself from interviewing him?
He was a traveling salesman, and I grew up with him always being on the road and kind of being, you know, he was present in our lives, but he was always, you know, 3 days a week out there on the road, that kind of thing. And I guess I just wanted to know what he had learned from it and the hardships of it. I found that there were some commonalities between what was, you know, challenging about his job versus what's challenging about my job. Even just the, you know, the fact that he had to fly all the time, and I have spent a good portion of the past 10 years on the road myself, and how that can make you feel alone or distant or tired, or how physically exhausting it can be. I often think of myself as a traveling salesman, less so obviously during the pandemic, but with all the touring that I've done, you're always going out there and meeting people and shaking their hand and trying to sell them your book or yourself.
Mm-hmm. A therapist once told you that you are hardwired for anxiety. How did you react to that?
I found it quite a relief, actually. I think I was beating myself up for a really long time that I wasn't able to handle things. Because I'm, you know, I'm a pretty high-functioning person, right? I've written a lot of books. Traveled a lot. I can present myself in, you know, in public to people. I'm a good communicator. And this was the thing that I couldn't control. And I thought it was something that was really wrong with me, or that, like I said, or that it was my fault. And so it was a relief to hear that there was just something biological about it or chemical about it, and that my body did certain things when I was under stress, and there are ways to contend with that. And whenever I figure out what the problem is, I almost always have a sense of relief, because if there's a problem, then there's probably a solution.
Yeah. You believe that a creative person must arrive at an intersection of hunger and fear to make great art. How many times have you reached this intersection in your own work?
I think anytime I sit down to write a book, there's always this downtime before I start writing the next book, where I'm kind of collecting myself, building myself up. But also, whenever I'm not writing, I wish that I were writing. But also, you can't always be writing. Your brain needs rest. And then at some point, there's kind of this trigger moment where my brain is like, enough rest, I must write. I have to succeed. I have to be making something happen. I have to make my work happen. And that's kind of that hunger. And then the fear is just sort of like sitting still. Your life stays exactly the same. I don't want my life to ever be too dull or too slow. I always want to be kind of in motion.
You say that writing moments between mothers and daughters will always be your most beloved territory. Why?
I get a kick out of listening to mothers and daughters talk to each other. I definitely have a fun mom to talk to. She's very wry and she's very smart. But I think that mothers and daughters, from my perspective anyway, have a kind of closeness, a particular kind of closeness, and yet they challenge each other, and they're like each other, and yet can be, you know, different too. And I don't know, there's just, it's different than talking to a dad, and it's different than talking to a sibling. It's, your mom kind of just knows you in a specific kind of way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially your mom, as you mentioned, and also the fact that she told you that you can do anything that you want. I'm curious, is there a favorite moment of writing between mothers and daughters that you've written in any of your books?
You know, I love the mother and daughter and All Grown Up. I have them, like, if I ever were to write a part two of that book, it would just be the two of them driving cross country together. Mm. Like, I just got a kick out of their vibe, their back and forth vibe. There's like a scene in my last novel, All This Could Be Yours, where the mother and the daughter in that book are kind of eating bad food in a kitchen and driving in a car together, and there's all these family secrets they're talking about. And again, there's like, you know, they're just sort of giving a little bit and not a lot, but there's a lot underneath the dialogue. I love that a lot. The Middlesteins, Edie Middlestein is a classic Jewish mother in my mind. The way she talks to everyone, I love. Actually, I've been working on this new novel, and I kind of have the mother off screen, and I woke up in the, you know, for most of the book, and then she's going to kind of show up at a climactic moment, and I woke up in the middle of the night, and I was like, she needs to be more present in the book.
Hmm. Yeah. You moved from New York to New Orleans 5 years ago. Why?
I lived in New York for a really long time, and it was really where I came of age, but it wasn't where I wanted to live out the rest of my life. And I had been going to New Orleans in the winter for a couple of years, for probably about 3 months a year. And it was just, you know, my happy place. And I wondered what it would be like to make my happy place my full-time place and to see how it made me feel and to see what that looked like. And I really had been thinking about where I wanted to be when I was 50. And now I'm here and I'm 50.
That's great to hear. And when you were living in New York City, you experienced a lot of housing instability, right? You were moving an incredible number of times over a very short period of time.
Yeah, there was 1 year in particular, actually 10 years ago, where I couldn't afford my apartment in New York anymore, so I sublet it. And I was couch surfing all over the country, in the city too, and I would find a place to stay for a couple of weeks. I did come down to New Orleans and I stayed here because I found a cheap place to live for a couple of months. That was my first time really spending time down in the city. And it was not a fun time in my life at all. It was right before my fourth book came out, and it was just a really challenging time in my life. Housing instability is a huge crisis in this country, and I was lucky that I had people to look out for me at that time. It was a humbling experience.
In your book, you write that you're never short of ideas in New York City. Is that still the case in New Orleans? Or no trouble coming up with ideas there?
I don't think I'm ever going to have trouble coming up with ideas. I have an excess of ideas. It's really about figuring out which ideas are the ones that you're supposed to engage with for me.
Mm-hmm. Is that tricky?
Yeah, it takes a while. You want to make sure that it's worth your time. Sometimes I do have false starts with books where I'll write 50 pages of one book and then think that's not the best use of my time. That's not the direction that I need to be going in. Sometimes I'll write 50 pages to meet one character and then pluck that character and put it into another book.
Yeah. I've read in some of your craft talks, you talked about how you have this period sort of getting acquainted with the characters and thinking about them, and they don't come to you immediately. You have to develop them and kind of spend time with them before you commit them to paper.
I sometimes write conversations between two characters that I know I'll never use and just let them go talk for a while. I remember for All Grown Up, I had two characters just talk about all the drugs they'd ever done in their lives, like drug experiences for, I don't know, pages and pages. And I never used any of it at all. But when I was done, I was like, oh, I know who they are. And not only that, I know how they feel about each other. They were able to be kind of like funny about it and vulnerable about it. And I think it's the same, you know, all of these topics, it's like the same as setting characters down to have a meal together or having characters have sex, as I said before, or, you know, just vulnerable human moments, putting your characters together, seeing what happens, what comes out of it, knowing that it's okay if you don't use it. It's okay if you throw it away. That this is an exercise that you need to go through in order to get to the truth of these people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well said. What have you learned about yourself from writing I Came All This Way to Meet You?
Oh my gosh. Okay, you're only the second person to ask me that. And the first time I was like, I don't know. No, but I do know. I did realize that I like myself a little bit more than I thought I did. That was kind of a big revelation. Like I looked at the end and I thought, all right, I've made all these mistakes. I'm not a terrible person. I'm at least an okay person. And that was important for me to realize that I had done some okay things with my life too, and that I'd accomplished things. And that wasn't why I set out to write the book at all. I wrote the book because I had these stories inside of me that I was dying to tell. That's why I write any book, is because it's in me and it has to get out. It's not a cathartic moment. It's just I feel a little bit more comfortable with myself after writing this book.
Well, that's good. But in my humble opinion, I think you're selling yourself short. You should think of yourself as more than an okay person. But I mean, that's progress. Maybe another memoir would get you, you know, maybe that would help. But yeah. Jamie Attenberg, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us today. And congratulations on I Came All This Way to Meet You, Writing Myself Home.
Thank you for having me.
Jamie Attenberg is the author of the memoir, I Came All This Way to Meet You, Writing Myself Home. You can find out more about Jamie at wpr.org/beta.
The last 10 minutes of Head are almost like a kind of a download of information.
Coming up, we look back at the 1968 Monkees movie Head with Michael Nesmith and Peter Mills. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.